Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's 2:33 a.m. at the Kaminsky Method Acting Studio, and you're listening to Night Call. Hello and welcome to Night Call, a call-in show for our dystopian reality. I am Molly Lambert, and with me, as always, is
Tess Lynch.
And joining us today, we have a very special guest, Mara Wilson. Mara is a writer, a playwright, and an actor. She's done a lot of voice acting. She has a Substack called Shan't We Tell the Vicar, and is the author of the book Where Am I Now? Welcome to Night Call, Mara.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. I love this show.
Oh, we're so happy to have you on. We were going to talk today about a couple of Night Call-y things, isolation tanks, which you have some experiences with, and also acting classes and how they are like cults. Which,
oh yeah, I've written articles about this. That's a real thing.
Perfect.
Why don't we kick it off with a Night Call?
Hi, Night Call. It's Lindsay. I heard the topic this week was acting classes that are like cults, and that brought back some memories. I was a high school and college drama geek and a drama major in college, and I took part in some really questionable activities that seemed normal at the time, but that looking back, I'm kind of horrified by. Some examples: in high school drama class, we were regularly made to do stream of consciousness type exercises that ended with all of us screaming or crying as a group. And I had a succession of drama teachers who, thankfully, as far as I could tell, were not abusive. Some of them were a little creepy, but I was not abused, but they were very cult leader-like, and they often had inner circles of students who they spent a crazy amount of time with. And people talked about them sort of like they were gods and you were not allowed to criticize them in any way. By college, I felt like acting classes were more like unlicensed therapy, just a lot of exercises, again, that asked people to draw on childhood trauma. And if you didn't really have any childhood trauma, you would kind of be pressured to make it up. I witnessed quite a few full-on emotional meltdowns by fellow students and occasionally professors. And of course, there were no clear rules about confidentiality or anything like that. Looking back, I can't believe that I just thought this was normal or deep. So I wonder if Mara Wilson or any of you who participated in any acting classes or theater classes have any thoughts on this. Should we start regulating this stuff? Should we have clearer guidelines for acting classes where personal info is shared, or teachers seem to think they're therapists? Or maybe since it's been like 20 plus years since I did this, maybe now there are clearer rules or guidelines. Just curious. Mara Wilson, love your work. Thank you for all your really insightful writing about Hollywood and growing up as a child star. And thank you, Night Call, as always.
Nice Night Call. This is something we've been talking about a lot over the past couple of weeks, really starting when we kind of launched into Nexium, the acting class as cult phenomenon. Mara, I'm really eager to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, none of the things that she said surprised me. I mean, I've been through similar things myself, especially the thing about people worshiping a teacher and then the teacher kind of having an inner circle. That was very much like that happens at every acting school, I would say. Like the favoritism is absurd. And I definitely knew teachers. Like there was a teacher I knew who would take a young boy with him to Europe every summer.
What?
And yes,
Tadzio.
And he would there would be I can't name any names because of lawsuits probably, yeah. But I knew a teacher who would do that. The boys were all over 18, but that didn't make it any less creepy.
Yeah.
And really kind of nobody commented on it for a while. We were just like, oh, that's kind of what he does. And then, you know, a lot of times the boy would come back like, you know, questioning his sexuality or something. But at the time it was like, well, how can you even question this? You know? So I've definitely seen that happen. I also think a lot of the exercises they do, it really does depend on the school. There's a lot that's like Strasbourg based, which was like the very early acting schools, has a lot to do with the idea of like searching through your personal memories and drawing on your own traumas to do things. And for some people that really works, you know, and there's substitution where it's like, all right, you're sad on stage because somebody dies. So you imagine that somebody close to you dies. I know that kind of worked for me when I was a child sometimes, but I was a pretty sensitive child to begin with. So I kind of would draw on a lot of different things. Now I don't like doing that at all when I'm acting. I feel like I'm much more like sort of the Adler school, which is more like, no, build a character and become them because, you know, you don't have to be a murderer to play a murderer.
Right.
So I do think that there's definitely like, it definitely depends on the ones that you do. I will say that like, I had a really good acting teacher as a child. Like he was intense, but he was very respectful. And I think that's probably because he worked with children and he had children of his own. So he knew he was an intense guy, but he was very smart and very sweet. And, you know, I loved him and I still love him. I saw him a few months before the pandemic started and like thanked him for always taking care of me.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a vulnerable position to be
exactly.
in, to be a child
yeah.
actor. And you obviously have to hope that everybody around you has good intentions and isn't a bad person because it would be so easy to manipulate that situation.
Yeah.
I feel like you always hear stories about kid actors being, you know, what you were saying, like, you know, hey, think of something really sad. And I feel like there's a bunch of stories about like telling some kid like, hey, your dog just died just to like get them to cry.
Just kidding.
That's something that they don't do anymore because they did that a lot in the early days. I mean, there's stories of, you know, of Judy Garland and Margaret O'Brien and all of these people being told like, we're going to kill your dog. Things like that.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That happened a lot. And I think because of that, people have been a lot more careful with it. But, so I think that, and I do think that like, by the time that, like the 70s and 80s were fucking terrible for child actors. There was just all kinds of unregulated nonsense. And I can tell because when I talk to child actors who are even 5 or 10 years older than me, they have stories that I do not. Mm-hmm. They definitely have stories where they're like, yeah, I was definitely abused, or I was left to do really dangerous things, or, you know, they had me running through a minefield with no protection, and they had
right.
me do these things, and they had me up late at night, and all of this. And whereas I was like, my most uncomfortable moments did not come on filming on sets. They came from like creepy men writing me messages and things like that. Like, that's something that people don't understand. People will be like, Hollywood is so bad to children. And I'm like, yes, it is. But you guys also need to take responsibility for the general public, too, because the general public does a lot of things.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I have to imagine that after the John Landis Twilight Zone movie.
Oh, yeah.
Where he murdered two children and Vic Morrow because of lack of regulation and because of like working them more hours than you're supposed to and that kind of stuff, that there had to be some kind of a clampdown of like, we actually do have to like.
Well, somebody who is related to that man was very rude to me a couple of years ago. And I remember thinking to myself, and I actually met him when I was a child. And I think like, at the time, I thought it was because, like, a director I knew, not Danny DeVito, guys, a director that I knew was, like, friends with him. But I'm pretty sure that director was only friends with him because they worried about his children. and they wanted to make sure that, like, the children were going to grow up okay. And, you know, I don't know if that happened. But somebody who was related to him. And I remember thinking to myself, like, If he ever pulls the, well, now I'm just totally revealing who this is, but everybody already knows anyway. If he pulls the, don't you know who my father is card on me, I can say, yes, he's the reason that we had child labor laws. He's the reason I was safe on sets.
Right.
My dad told me some story I'd never heard recently because, you know, I was like a little ginger kid. So people would sometimes be like, hey, you want to like come do some acting? And I was not really interested. But there was a time when, like, I saw John Landis at a deli, and he was like, oh, you know, what beautiful hair you have. And my dad just, like, grabbed me, pulled me away and was like, that's John Landis. Like, he can't be near children.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing is that as you get older, though, it people don't think about the well-being of actors as they get older. And I do know definitely several people who have taken acting classes that were fronts for cults or religious groups.
Yeah. So let's talk about that, because I heard about this from Tess a while ago. So definitely acting teachers all have this kind of guru
thing
about them, but some of them really are gurus and are trying to get people either into cults or sometimes just like an MLM.
I know some people who went to an acting class that was run by a very shady organization that they knew about, and they knew that it was there, and I'm not even sure how they got into it in the first place, but I think maybe they assumed that they, you know, wouldn't feel obligated to join, but by the end of it they were so exhausted and so broken down that they almost said, okay, yes, we'll join just to get people to stop. And that happens in cults more often than you'd think, where people like, I don't want to do this, and then they do, and then they end up justifying their decision later on, where they're like, well, actually, I'm glad I joined. I mean, I know I joined it in a moment of stress, but I'm glad I did it. I was so tired, and you know, I was so tired, and it was this, but it was actually a good thing, because that's the way human beings work, and we try to reduce cognitive dissonance, and, you know, we try to get rid of anything that isn't in sync with our ego, you know, and our self-concept. And that's a really hard thing to do. So I think there's a lot of self-justifying.
I think there's something also that's interesting that happens in acting classes and also kind of the improv community and stuff like that, where it takes over your social life. If you're really dedicating a lot of time to it, it becomes such a tight community. And you've been so vulnerable in front of this community that you kind of believe they're your friends, even if they're not actually your friends. And this has happened to me. Like, I'm not saying it's something that shouldn't happen. It's a natural kind of occurrence. But then I think that makes you extra susceptible to, you know, having boundaries be crossed. Or in the instance of acting coaches, for instance, who are affiliated with cult-like religions or organizations, eventually, like you said, you kind of feel like beaten down by the fact that everyone around you is normalizing something that's not normal, and it's hard to resist that after a while.
Right. And also, like, it must be like seductive to be like, oh, if I were part of the inner circle, like maybe I'd book a bunch more work, because
of course
I'd be, you know.
I mean, there are acting schools out there where they have people there who work who work for casting, some of the best acting schools. So there's a reason why. I mean, most of these actors that come out of these schools are wonderful actors, but there's a reason that they're getting booked over people who went to other schools who are also wonderful actors. I think another thing is that acting for so many people is all about truth. and it's all about authenticity. And you spend so much of your time obsessing about being fake. And you spend so much of your time obsessing about what is real and what isn't, that after a while, it's kind of like you have no idea what you have no idea what real is anymore. And you don't know if the things that you're doing in class are real or not. And people will always accuse you of being fake and phony and phoning it in. And that's a really big thing. That's like one of an actor's biggest fears, is being phony. So there's this idea that you kind of need to break yourself down, and you need to break yourself down and try all of these things until you're really authentic, until you're really real. That's something that you saw a lot with Allison Mack from Allison Mack in Nexium.
Yeah, I think that's how we got on this topic, is because we were just like, oh, you know, a lot of these people are actors that are in Nexium, and they're actors who are like not fully fulfilled in their careers and want something. And this guy is like promising it to them.
Well, it's there's so much talk about being real and being authentic and really accessing your emotion. And that is something that is incredibly important to an actor. Being an actor is really like, it can be a really ascetic thing. Like, we actually had a class at my school, and there was a teacher there. I don't know if he's still working there, but I was not a big fan of his, because I did a project for his class, and a bunch of us did projects. And at the end of the class, he was like, I was a little disappointed in the quality of the work, guys. And we were like, okay, well, we'll step it up next time. And then apparently the next class came in and they were like, oh my God, the previous class was so shitty. The work they did was so bad. And the other teacher was like, I wanted to throw myself out of the window. It was so bad. And after that, I was like, oh, clearly I can't trust you, because you're talking shit about us to your other classes. But other people right. loved him. And he had a class that he would teach that he said was taught was based on like Russian and Thai and like very sort of like Eastern oriented, you know, kind of classes. And he you had to wear all white, and you weren't allowed to eat, drink, use any drugs, or have sex 24 hours before the class. And you
I
had
know
to,
this class.
Yes. And you had to clean the floor beforehand, like a, you know, like a Japanese monk. You had to clean the floor beforehand. And I was supposed to be put in that class my senior year. And I was like, no, fuck that. I'm not taking this. This is my senior year. Put me in the classes that I want to be in. So yeah. I think I took like a voice lessons class instead, because I was like, I'll just get my, I'll just learn to sing better. Like, that's going to be, I think that's a practical skill, instead yeah. of making artwork that like probably not a lot of people want to see anyway.
You saw everybody wearing all white and you were like, I don't know if,
yeah, actually this does look like a cult.
And then I knew so many people who were doing his shows and were not getting paid and we're putting in so much work. And I remember thinking to myself, what do you get from it? Like, I had a teacher there who I really loved, but like, she had a life that was separate than ours, you know, and we didn't consider, like, and I used to jokingly call her like the guru, but she wouldn't have liked that. I don't think, like, she very much had her own life, and she didn't live in the city. She lived outside of New York, and she was really wonderful. And the thing is, like, I had a really great time at my acting school, and ours was so much better compared to so many of the other schools there. But there still are these issues. There still are these problems.
Yeah.
Really quick, I think we should take an excerpt from a night email. This one comes from Peter, and it's just following up with this topic. He says, my question regarding acting classes as cults is, if acting classes are easily susceptible to cult-like practices because of the vulnerability of performers, its hierarchical design, and wise leader status of acting teachers, legitimized by IMDb credits, for example, how do you think these types of acting groups can avoid such cult-like tendencies and be healthy environments to grow and learn?
I mean, that's a really good question. I think that the students need to make sure that they're safe. I think that they need to agree on rules beforehand. That I think is very good. Like, I think that sort of the issue of consent is something that comes up a lot in acting classes. Like, I had, I remember in high school, and I went to an art school. We had some kind of class, and maybe it was a mask class or something. And we had to like assume a character. And there was one kid in there that was getting like really violent and shovey. And we told him afterwards, we were like, dude, you need to stop shoving people. You need to like be really careful. And he would just say, well, I can't change my character.
Right. Totally. I've heard about similar situations where people are shoving people or getting violent or getting kind of like overly sexual with somebody. And then they're like, it wasn't me. It was the character. The emotion came over me. And like, what am I to do? And there really is no framework for regulating something like that because, what do you
do? I've had friends also say, like, we were doing this scene and then I was like, this is kind of hot. Do you want to have sex? And the other actor was like, no, this is acting. And I remember them saying that and me being like, what? Like, that's not appropriate.
And, right. And you saw that with like the James Franco acting school, which was everything bad we've been talking about sort of being used to manipulate people that are going in actually like genuinely hopeful that this is going to help their acting careers and make them better actors. And then if somebody just wants to use it for their own personal narcissism to be abusive, it's not hard to do that.
There are intimacy coaches now on set, right, which I think is really good. And I think that there should be something like that for child actors in general. There should be like an on-set psychologist. There should be something like that. This has been something that I've been talking about for years now to make sure that children are okay. But I also think that, yeah, there probably does need to be some kind of regulation involved with acting classes. If I don't know if like Actors Equity or SAG wants to do this or something, but just making sure that people are not getting horribly abused. I think that there also needs to be rules agreed upon beforehand, you know, the guidelines there. I had a teacher in college who said that her whole thing was thou shalt not get hurt. So if anybody was physically hurt, like we had to stop and do the, you know, and completely make sure. Like I did one thing where I was like upside down. I was trying to like I don't know, do like a yoga pose or something. And I fell back and I fell onto my head. And she stopped everything and was like, oh my God, let's make sure that everything is here. Like everything is safe here. And that's great. But I also think that we need to make sure emotionally that everything is okay. And I do think that a lot of times actors will volunteer personal things about themselves because they feel like that's more, you know, like that's like the better thing to do. There's a lot of like, okay, I need to overshare. I need to be myself. I need to do these things. I have to do this. And I think that actors need to know, like, no, you don't.
Yeah. There has to be like a boundary of like, actually, like right. If somebody's hitting you during a scene, like you can stop the scene and say like, that's not okay.
Mara has a good point that it's not just about like physical acts of aggression. I think that unless there are parameters in place, at least something that I've heard of happening, especially recently is like, if you don't really know what the boundary is, and if you just, and you could even just say nobody gets hurt, there's also like, this, if you go off book and you're like intimidating someone and you're not really sure of where that boundary is, that's like that can cause psychological damage. Like it's, especially if it's off book.
That's also when people are like, oh, we're getting to the heart of it. Like this is where the good acting starts.
I think a lot of the time that's really kind of encouraged and it is powerful to watch, but it's also, you know, kind of unfair. It's like cheating in a way when you,
I mean, yeah, the thing is that there are like, I've noticed like a couple different personality types that seem to be drawn to acting. And one is the very over the top type, you know, and people say you see that a lot with musical theater and stuff. And these are the people who, and I think I get the feeling that Allison Mack was one of these people, partly because I met her when I was a child.
Really? Was she was also a child actor originally, right?
She was very sweet. And we were doing charity work together. And her whole thing was, I want to help people. But she was very sweet and bubbly and kind and it does really, it serves as a reminder for me that a lot of people who get into cults think that they're helping. They think that they're doing something good for the world and themselves.
You really saw that in Nexium too, you know, and that she clearly was like, I'm here to help people. I'm here to like improve everyone.
Yeah, that was definitely that was something that we like, I'm pretty sure we met at an organization that was helping like abused children and like sexually abused girls. And the irony of that now like blows my fucking mind. But And I think in Seduce, the better of the two documentaries about NXIVM, by far, I think Indy Oxenberg actually points out that she was obsessed with being authentic because people always told her that she was fake.
Mm. Yeah. And as a child actor, that must be a hard line to walk because yes. It's like your authenticity comes from the fact that you're like an actual child.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't think that I was a particularly great actress as a child. I think that I was pretty good.
We beg to differ.
Yeah. Come on, Mara.
Iconic Matilda.
I'm hard on myself, but I don't think that I was like I've seen better child actors than
I would say that you seemed very authentic and like there was no craft to it, which is very hard to do. You seemed like they just found a kid and put them on screen.
I've always been painfully sincere and I've always had a good ear for dialogue. So I think that those things were good, you know, for me. But I mean, I look at like Quvenzhané Walls or somebody like that, and I'm like, okay, she's actually a good actress. Or you know, I look at a lot of like child actors, and I'd be like, okay, you're better than I was. But it was much easier for me to act as a child because I could access different emotions very easily. Because when you're a child, you don't know that you're vulnerable. And then I got older and, you know, and my mother died and I went through a lot and I became a teenager and I learned how awful the world was and I got taken advantage of in many ways, the way that everybody in the world does. And I became very cynical and it was really hard for me to access these emotions. So yeah. I often think that, you know, and it felt to me kind of like in His Dark Materials, your demon stops changing form, or in, you know, you stop being able to go to Narnia or Never Never Land or something like that. Like, it very much did feel like something like when you grow up, you lose that innocence and that willingness to be vulnerable. And I think that that did kind of happen to me. And acting is definitely harder for me now because I can't access that ease I had with emotions, that ease I had with vulnerability. So, and that's another personality type you see too. You see people who are wonderful when they let go, but they're also very emotional and they're also, you know, they're sensitive. Most sensitive people or most callous, you know, cynical people are not callous, but most cynical people are sensitive. And I feel like that cynicism is like a callous.
Right. Which is also why in the acting class, they're like, you got to rip off the callous and like get back to that sensitive, innocent place inside of
you.
Well,
first of all, that's not how skin works. But yeah, no, that's the thing. But then instead it clearly doesn't work. And it's like, well, maybe it's time for a different kind of acting. There's many different kinds of acting. You know, there's Grotowski, which is all about physicality, and there's Meisner, which is all about being in the moment. And there's Adler, which is all about, you know, being a character. And, I think a lot of the best actors I saw were in, like at NYU, were in the experimental theater wing, because what they did is they allowed you to be very in your body, very in your moment, and there wasn't a lot of shame.
Yeah.
Like, there might have been weird stuff that I didn't know about, but for them, it was just sort of like, let your freak flag fly, let's have fun.
Right, and that stuff is all super fun when it's consensual.
Well, let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we will talk with Mara about isolation tanks.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, Mara, when you were talking about being in your body, is that Meisner you said?
Well, that's pretty much any kind of acting. I think I don't know as much about Meisner as I thought I did. When I met up with my old acting teacher, I started talking to him about Meisner, and then I realized that he knew all about it and I didn't. so that he'd actually been really trained in Meisner. So what I thought was Meisner wasn't actually, but most people use like a different kinds of, you know, different kinds of acting, but I'm not somebody who's very much, I'm like, I can't dance. I'm really bad at it. I never know what to do with my hands. You know, I have an expressive face, but I've never felt particularly in my body, I think.
I think that's probably true for a lot of smart kids too, though. You're like, I'm a little brain, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I was wondering if you'd ever tried to get in your body by going in an isolation tank.
There we go.
I have, yes. I have. I did it. So last year, I was having a really, really hard time. I was dealing with a lot of physical illness problems, and that was causing me a lot of mental illness anguish too. I was having some confusing situations with relationships. My cat was diagnosed with cancer. I was having a lot of like professional struggles. It was a really, really hard time. And my friend came to visit, and my friend she's like sort of an expert on like chronic illness and pain and things like that. And she also she's much more like new agey and open to things than I am. I'm always like the skeptical one, but she said, why don't we do an isolation tank? And I think I only said yes because I actually have a friend who we call Dr. Flux. And Dr. Flux is a neuroscientist, and he does a lot about mental illness and such. And he has studied the effects of isolation tanks on the brain. And I told him, I said, I thought that we talked about it once, and I said, I don't think I could ever do that. I would get so claustrophobic. And he goes, I'm claustrophobic, and it wasn't a big deal. He says, you find ways to deal with it. And so my friend Allison and my sister and I did this. And I was like, okay, Dr. Flux says it's okay. I trust him. I trust Allison. We'll see what happens. And so we went to one in West LA near where my sister was living at the time. And we did it. And it was an incredibly positive experience.
How long were you in there?
2 hours.
Whoa, Mara.
Yeah. But I mean, I kept getting out because like I had to pee.
Yeah.
So you'd get out, you'd use the toilet and you'd like wash yourself off and then get back in the isolation tank. 2 hours. And I think the first hour was kind of a struggle because I was getting used to it. Or it wasn't a struggle, mm-hmm. but it was, I wasn't sure what I was supposed to be feeling. But the second hour was amazing. Absolutely amazing.
I feel like, you know, maybe this is just for anyone who is sort of an overly in their brain person. It always takes me so long to get out of my brain into mm-hmm. my body. Mm-hmm. And then when you finally do, and it is like, you know, there's this uncomfortable period where you can't stop thinking. This happens to me anytime I do yoga. Mm-hmm. It's like there's half an hour of me being like, I don't want to do this. I have to, you know, I'm thinking about something else. And then just
absolutely.
Like at a certain point, you're like in your body and it's amazing.
Yeah, it takes me forever. I my brain fights it every step of the way. But yeah, it was a really interesting experience. I didn't hallucinate or anything. And what I did with it wasn't like one of those pod like tanks. It was like a small room. And what I did, because I was afraid of becoming claustrophobic, there was also like a button you could press in case everything was worried was in case anything was wrong. But I got in. And, you know, you're nude and the water is like completely cleaned and you have to put earplugs in and you have to sort of be like face up. And I mean, I'm pretty short, so there was still a lot of space around me, but I left the door open, you know, 2 inches. And then after a while, I closed it to an inch. And then after a while, I closed it to half an inch. And then after a while, I closed it fully. And I did that, and that I think made it feel much better. And the first hour I was thinking about a lot of weird things. I was sort of trying to find my like buoyancy. I was lying on my back. I was trying to make sure that like the water, you know, solution didn't go into my mouth or my nose. And I think I like briefly fell asleep and then I quickly woke up, you know, I dozed off, but then something happened in the second half. Like, I can't imagine having hallucinations in there. And I really don't think it would be a good place to do psychedelics. I really yeah. don't think it would. But I was lying there and I heard this sound. And I was like, that's a really beautiful sound. What is it? And then I realized it was my own breathing.
Oh my God. Whoa. That's yeah. cool.
And I felt this like tremendous feeling of joy. And like, clarity and purity. And I was like, this is amazing. Everything is so beautiful right now. I feel weirdly at peace. And it was the most peace I'd felt in years. And what I ended up doing was I would reach for the wall and then I would kind of like push myself off it and like go find the other wall. And then I would go find the bottom walls. And it was like I was playing a game with myself. I felt like an otter or something mm-hmm, where mm-hmm. I was just like, I can touch the wall and touching things is amazing. And I'm swimming around in here. Like I was just full of delight.
Yeah. So it sounds like you were having a psychedelic experience.
Yeah. You just
I kind of was. Yeah. yeah. It was like, it was, yeah. I mean, I've never done them because I'm a control freak and I'm scared, but yeah, but actually it does sound a lot like when a lot of my friends microdose, that's what, and a lot of my friends do. One of them met Nithya while microdosing, Nithya Raman, and gave her a hug and was like, thank you for what you're doing for the city and the world. And my sister and Nithya was like, is she okay? Does this affect you in a negative way? And I was like, no, she's fine. She's fine. Don't worry about it. It's just microdosing. She's happy.
Some people on this call may have experience with microdosing. I won't yes. say who.
Somebody might be a big fan of microdosing, but could easily see how a slightly more macro dose would lead you to hug a city official.
It was probably a bit like microdosing in that like finding everything beautiful, you know, everything becoming really lovely kind of way. I didn't have any visual hallucinations. I didn't have any, you know, not really any auditory, but it was like my senses were amped and I felt like joy and delight in a way that I hadn't felt in a long time because I'd been in physical pain and I'd been depressed that I was in physical pain. But it was just the coolest thing because it felt very much like a childlike sense of wonder.
Yeah.
And I felt like I could find the beauty in things. I could find the beauty in my own breathing.
That's amazing. Well, yeah. So when you say it wasn't the pod, but it was like a room,
yeah.
how big is the room? And is the room entirely filled with, is there like a tank in the room?
It was, well, there was like, it was like there was a bathroom and there, like there was, I think there was like a toilet in the shower and, there was, or maybe actually the toilets were in the hall and I might've had to go down the hall to use them, but there were, there was a shower there and there was like a bench to, so it was like a little bit like a gym shower. And then there was this thing that kind of looked like, it looked like a big box or like with like a vault door or something. And then you would open the door and get in. And that was, I don't know, maybe like 8 feet by like 6 feet or something like that.
And so it was too tiny.
It wasn't too tiny. Like I could comfortably like swim around, but like push myself around a little bit and not immediately touch a wall. I'm, like I said, I'm also very short, but I think that they do take like different body sizes into consideration and tall people into consideration and everything. So there definitely was enough room and there was water, but then there was also like a high ceiling above me, so I wouldn't hit my head when I got out. Right. I don't remember how high the ceilings were, but like, I don't know if I would have been able to stand up. It was probably like 5 feet, but, you know, you could, or actually probably taller than that. And so, yeah, it felt weird because at first it's like, whoa, am I like putting myself into like a little freezer right now or something like that? It did look like a little, like it looked kind of like a freezer. Like if you work at like a restaurant or something, but,
like a walk-in.
Yeah. A walk-in. It looked like a walk-in freezer. And that felt a little weird. And there was probably only like a foot or two of like, I'd say probably a foot or so of water. And the water definitely had stuff in it that was going to help you float.
Like extra salt or what?
Yeah. Something like that.
Kind of like the stuff that's in like the Dead Sea, I guess. Yeah. Like there's different kinds of chemicals. I don't know what it is exactly. And I didn't totally float at first. Like, I feel like my butt kind of dragged me down, you know, like I had to sort of manage that. But like there was, eventually I was like, oh, okay, I get the hang of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you gone back since?
I've wanted to so badly, but COVID happened.
Yeah.
So. Right. Yeah, I really want to go back. And I was actually talking to my friend Chris Fleming and his partner Melissa about it. And Chris is he's a comedian and he's very weird. and so is his partner. And I was like, you guys would really love this, I think. Like if for nothing else, it would make a great story. And so I was looking at like the different places like in Pasadena and places that were like a little closer to where I live. And then COVID happened and I was like, well, probably nobody's going to be able to do this for a really long time.
Yeah, that's like last on the list of things they're going to open.
Exactly. And that makes me really sad because I really did feel this. I told my friends it was like meditating without having to do the work of meditating.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because my brain does not work well for meditation. Like my sister and I sometimes do, we do like a chanting thing. She found a thing that has chanting in it. And I think I was a little worried about that at first because I was like, is this a religious thing? But it's not. It's just that saying things and imagining things, like you say certain things and you imagine certain things when you say them. And that like that helps me, I think, more than just sitting and thinking.
Yeah.
But being in the tank. Yeah. Being in the tank, it was like I was meditating, but I didn't have to do the hard work of meditating. It was like it was meditating for me.
I'm Elia Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6
million? Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, now we're all in isolation tanks of the mind.
It's true. Well, I was just thinking, I was like, I wonder if there's a way to kind of DIY an isolation tank.
I feel like there is.
I feel like a stock tank that I'm DIYing. So I was like, wait, if you just cover that with a dome, couldn't it be your own
an outdoor isolation tank?
I mean, maybe, because, but it's like, it feels very different than what we're doing now, because right now we're forced into it. And this going into an isolation tank is definitely like a reprieve from everything. So yeah. I think that's, you know, it's definitely different because I don't know. It's like a weirdly joyous thing, I think.
Something about floating in water too, just like does definitely take you back to being in the womb. I definitely just feel that way anytime I'm in a pool and floating. It's like, oh, I feel so happy and comfortable.
I used to fall asleep in the car. Like Molly, you grew up in LA, right?
Yeah.
So you probably have the experience that I did where your parents would drive you around and you would sit in the front seat and just stare at yourself in the rearview mirror all the time while they like listen to their oldies.
Oh yeah. Tess knows what this is also.
Yes.
Yeah. I moved here at that time as well.
Yes, exactly. So I had that. I have a lot of memories of like sitting in the front seat and like staring at myself in the rear view window and thinking that I looked prettier in that, or the side view mirrors actually. And thinking that I looked much prettier in that light and like listening to like sitting on the dock of the bay or something. But on long car trips, like we would have to go to like, I think we had to like go to Calabasas because my psychiatrist was out there, which is a very LA sentence.
Oh, totally. My psychiatrist was also in the West Valley, and it was like the worst thing about therapy was you had to drive to the West Valley.
Exactly.
To do it.
But I would like, I remember like I would always fall asleep in the car on the way there and the way back. And I would either listen to oldies, which I secretly loved, or I would like listen to like Weezer's Pinkerton or, you know, Third Eye Blind or some shit. And like, and I would always take a little nap. And I've heard people say later that like sometimes being in a car can kind of be like the womb to some people.
It puts babies to sleep too,
it does.
Right?
Colicky babies. You put some colicky babies in a car.
Some of them are the opposite.
Like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, now that you're saying that, I'm like, do you have all these road trip memories of being in a car? Yeah, when somebody else is driving and you can just fall asleep.
Yeah.
And just like the sound of the road and the music. My parents would play like a Pat Metheny album always. And like, if I hear it, it just, and I had a lot of trouble just falling asleep as a kid. So
I did too.
We had a lot of like albums that my parents would put on to try and help me to relax. And one of them was Avalon by Roxy Music.
Oh, was
a big one. So like anytime I hear Avalon, which I like love as an album anyway, I just will get so relaxed.
Yeah, that's me with Paul Simon and Paul Simon's Graceland, I think.
I feel like Graceland is the one for a lot of people.
It is, yeah. I didn't realize like all the issues with it until I was much older.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh, he recorded this during apartheid? Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
He's the worst. I'm a strong anti-Paul Simon.
Molly's very allergic.
Very allergic to Paul Simon. But I understand that it's like a lot of people's.
A lot of white people, white Jewish people in particular, we have a soft spot for him. You know, can't apologize for some of these things.
I feel like it's just my Los Angeles-ness overrides it because I'm like, he stole music from Los Lobos. And like, you don't fuck with Los Lobos to come to L.A. But I understand people's affection for it. And Tess was listening to River of Dreams the other day, the Billy Joel album, which is another.
Oh, yeah. Billy Joel was another one, yeah.
It was early Billy Joel for my childhood drives. If my parents had played River of Dreams, I would have been like so mortified by that point. I think they probably just played it in private.
One of my favorite songs as a child was For the Longest Time, which probably foreshadows like my teenagerhood in like a cappella groups.
Oh,
and
totally.
Yeah. It was definitely. Thanks for making me into that kind of kid, mom and dad. But no, the worst actually is my stepmother's taste in music. It's very, very like overwrought ballads and very like syrupy ballads that she puts on. A lot of like 70s stuff, but like not good 70s stuff, like Bread, things like that.
Works for me.
The Carpenters, but not like the good Carpenters, not like Superstar, which it's rules, but yeah. but they're more like the stuff that you know that Karen was like, why are we doing this? Can I just drum and be myself? Yeah. So riding in the car with her, like I remember we drove to Las Vegas and back with like my best friend from high school. And we all just spent time like swapping albums back and forth. And I think there was a lot of Ben Folds 5, and weirdly, Rick Astley was there too. Yeah.
The early Rick roll. Yeah. Yes. I mean, I think, you know, in absence of being able to go in an isolation tank or even an acting class, I think it's, you know, visualizations of this type of thing. If you can just like visualize yourself in an isolation tank or like visualize yourself in the back, you know, in the car on that road trip, like I find that very comforting. I was doing a visualization about being a beaver who lives in a beaver.
That sounds really nice.
Den, because I watched some nature show and I was like, ooh, wish I were a beaver.
I've definitely had some dreams where you know, and like that brought me like joy, which is surprising because usually my dreams are just stuff like I need to do the dishes and like
that's what mine are like.
Yeah, mine are really boring. Mine are like I'm in the shower and I can't find my like scrub my like. You know, I can't find like my mesh loofah. Where did it go? Is it on the floor of the tub? No, it's not. So
my, like grocery shopping. It's like
exactly
cool thing to dream about.
Yeah. It's just like, it's like I had a dream that like I threw something out and then I was like, oh no, it's not actually empty yet. Like a bottle of cleaning fluid or something. And then I took it out of the trash and I woke up and I was like, that was my dream. My dream was that I threw out like a bottle of bleach and was like, oh, it's not empty. I should probably use this up first. That was my fucking dream.
But it's horrible to be robbed of the opportunity to have a good dream and have it be that.
Yeah. But lately I have been having like really weird, vivid dreams. And I wonder if that's because of like isolation. And I think
everyone has, I think.
Yeah. And one thing I have to remind myself is that feeling of joy and like safety and wonder that I felt in that tank. I have that all the time. Like that I can at least remember that, even if I can't make myself feel that. That came from my mind. And I think like even if you use like hallucinogens or whatever it is, you know, safely to get to that point, it still comes from your own mind. Mm-hmm. And you can remind yourself that. And even if you can't feel that again in the moment, you can at least feel the memory of it. which is something.
Thank you so much, Mara.
Yeah, Mara, this was amazing. You're such a great guest. Thank you so much for joining us.
I mean, I talk a lot and I pontificate a lot. So
that's what we love. That's perfect.
Yeah. And so I figured that we would all have a good time.
Yeah, we loved having you. We've been wanting to have you on for a long time. So it's
thank
great.
You. Yes, I'm so happy to have done this.
And so everyone can join our new acting class that we're starting where definitely we're, not a cult.
Yeah, and I sit in the back with my arms folded, and if something's not okay, I'm like, that's not okay. Yeah.
Stop.
Stop.
We have flags. We have little
flags. Thou shalt not get hurt physically or emotionally.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes.
Cool. Thanks, Mara. Where can people find you?
They can find me. Let's see. They can find me, Mara Wilson, on Twitter, Mara Wilson on Instagram, my Substack, mara.substack.com. I also just started a Cameo if anybody wants to watch videos of me and my cats for their birthday and do shout outs and stuff. So I'm on there too. I'm pretty much just under my real name everywhere these days. So you can find me there.
Cool. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This has been great.
Hey guys, we have an announcement to make that is kind of bittersweet. We are going to be wrapping up the show. We started Night Call almost 3 years ago in 2018, and it was a reboot of our show Girls in Hoodies, which was when we were all at ESPN a long, long time ago. We've had so much fun doing Night Call. We're all so, so proud, and we're all really grateful for the relationships that we've formed with our listeners. You guys are really cool, and that's been an amazing experience for us. We decided to wrap the show because we started getting busy. Emily in particular is taking some time off to do some cool projects, work stuff, and we just felt like it wouldn't be the same without the three of us. So we thought the right thing to do would be to wrap it up as a team and then hopefully maybe at some point down the line do a third reboot, or would it be a second reboot because this is the first reboot? You tell us. We will be doing one more episode. It will be our finale, and that will be probably at some point in December before the holidays, and it will be all three of us. We're really looking forward to that. If you would like to call in and leave a voicemail for that show, please do 240-46-NIGHT. You can also email us at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. There may also be one more Patreon episode for our subscribers at patreon.com/nightcall. This was a very hard announcement to make, and we just wanted to let you guys know what was going on because we really like you and we're grateful for you. So thank you for supporting the show. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you one last time at some point. We'll let you know in December. Goodbye.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast.
Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network,
available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.